This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
That is a red line, because I think that is the plan by certain of the usual suspects to try and create de facto issues on the ground. No refugees in Jordan, no refugees in Egypt.
That's Jordan's King Abdullah II on sensitivity to the prospects of Palestinians leaving their homeland and going to Jordan or Egypt. Details coming up also. A pro-democracy leader who just returned to Chad from exile is pressing for the release of jailed protesters. And the departure of United Nations troops from Mali gives militants new space to operate. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. White House spokesman John Kirby today confirmed Israel has agreed to four-hour pauses in fighting each day in northern Gaza to allow civilians to evacuate. He called the agreement a step in the right direction. However, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today said there would be no ceasefire in the fighting until Hamas militants release all Israeli and foreign citizens it holds as hostages. International news media are reporting that the heads of the United States Central Intelligence Agency and Israel's Mossad Intelligence Service met today with the Qatari Prime Minister in Doha to discuss a possible deal for hostage releases. The outcome of the meeting is not yet known. Militants hold about 240 hostages in Gaza after snatching them in Hamas' October 7th attack on Israel. Today, the group Islamic Jihad, one of the militias fighting in Gaza, released a video of two hostages, an elderly woman and a teenage boy. The group said the two would be released if appropriate measures were met. Thousands of people are reported to be fleeing the northern part of the Gaza Strip as fighting in the area intensifies. And there are warnings that fewer and fewer medical facilities in Gaza are functioning after a month of conflict. Earlier today, I spoke with reporter Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem. So, what is the latest?
Well, the latest is that there are all kinds of reports, including Israeli press reports, of a deal in which there will be a four-hour pause in fighting each day that will, first of all, allow citizens from northern Gaza to move towards the south, which Israel has been telling them to do for several weeks now, would allow more humanitarian aid into Gaza, and would perhaps lead to the freedom of between 10 and 15 hostages, which is, much less than what Israel wants, but could be an important first step. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but that seems to be where it's moving towards. Israel has rejected calls for a complete ceasefire, saying that will just give Hamas an opportunity to rearm and that, you know, then they'll soon be back where they started. But a four-hour daily humanitarian pause to allow people to leave the northern Gaza Strip. And I think officials on all sides hope that once if this happens, then that would be the basis for a more expanded ceasefire.
And it seems like it's shrouded in mystery, but is there anything known about the reported meeting of the CIA and Mossad chiefs in Doha?
Well, that's what they're talking about. The Qataris have been, who have a lot of influence over Hamas, and in fact, the Hamas leadership is based in Qatar. So they've been trying to sort of negotiate this for quite a while now, like over a week. But this seems to be closer than we've seen about this sort of humanitarian pause. And that's what the head of the CIA and the head of the Israeli Mossad are doing there.
So how about the, we've been hearing that there have been some significant fighting in the West Bank. What has been reported there?
Yes, the West Bank city of Jenin, which has long been sort of a flashpoint between Israeli soldiers and Palestinian gunmen, and Palestinians are reporting that at least 10 people were killed in the West Bank. In the last week, 10 days, we've definitely seen an increase in in the West Bank. Israel is carrying out a lot of arrests of anyone who they believe is affiliated with Hamas, because there's some concern that Hamas will try to carry out attacks from the West Bank into Israel. It's actually much easier to get from the West Bank into Israel than it is to get from Gaza. So there's concern that the fighting could spread to the West Bank, and tensions are certainly running high in the West Bank as well.
Israel and Hamas are committing war crimes. That's what the UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk said yesterday. Any response from both sides?
Well, you know, I think both sides reject that, characterization. Mm-hmm. Israel says that it is simply responding to the Hamas attacks on October 7th when 3,000 Hamas gunmen came into Israel and, killed 1,400 Israelis, mostly civilians, and in some very gruesome ways. And so they're only responding. They say they've warned civilians to leave northern Gaza repeatedly, and so they reject this classification of war crimes. And Hamas says that it is simply defending itself against Israeli aggression. So both sides reject the UN claims.
And there has been an unbearable toll on civilians. What is the latest death toll from the...
Right. Well, in Israel, as I said, there was a 1,400 plus 39 soldiers have been killed in the fighting. In Gaza, the Hamas-affiliated health ministry says that the number is now 10,500, including more than 4,000 children. However, Israel thinks those numbers are inflated and also says that Hamas is not, or that the health ministry is not distinguishing between gunmen and civilians, and says that also at least some of the Palestinian civilians were killed by rockets that have fallen short. In other words, Hamas or Islamic Jihad rockets that didn't make it across the border into Israel. So it's very hard to know on the Palestinian side the exact numbers. Also, there are believed to be up to 1,500 people still buried under the rubble, and they are not included in the death toll.
Linda Grantstein in Jerusalem, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
The Israeli-Hamas conflict has resulted in extensive suffering for the people of Gaza. With daily bombardments and escalating violence over the past month, many Palestinians are trying to reach safety outside their war-torn homeland. But neighboring countries, notably Egypt and Jordan, appear to be reluctant to open their doors. Angie Omar reports from Cairo.
The governments of Egypt and Jordan have made clear they will not be opening their doors to Palestinian refugees from the conflict in Gaza. Jordan's King Abdullah II said during a meeting with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Berlin last month that the issue of Palestinians leaving their homeland is unacceptable.
And on the issues of refugees coming to Jordan, and I think I can quite strongly speak on behalf not only of Jordan as a nation, but of our friends in Egypt, that is a red line. Because I think that is the plan by certain of the usual suspects to try and create de facto issues on the ground. No refugees in Jordan, no refugees in Egypt.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi also expressed his worries about Palestinians fleeing into Egypt's Sinai last month after a meeting with the German chancellor in Cairo. One of his concerns is that the region then could be used to launch Hamas attacks against Israel. That could violate the peace treaty between Egypt and Israel. Egypt and Jordan have long been host countries for Palestinian refugees, providing shelter, education, healthcare, and employment opportunities. However, their recent statements indicate a change in approach. Both countries have emphasized the strain on their already limited resources. They argue that their economies and infrastructure are under pressure from several challenges, such as economic weakness, political tension, and regional conflicts. Both countries also are concerned that a flow of refugees could disrupt security in the region and potentially create social and political tensions within their own societies. Mohammed Rabia is the president of the Arab South Council in Washington and the winner of State of Palestine Lifetime Achievement Award. He says that under international human rights law, Arab nations are obligated to protect and assist refugees from Gaza, and that includes cooperating with the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, or UNRWA.
They applied to help them, give them shelter, give them money if they can, give them some money to help them in all kinds of ways, just like the UNRWA now. The UNRWA is helping, and the Arab countries are helping.
Although Egypt and Jordan are not allowing in refugees, they have played significant roles in advocating for Palestinian rights and have supported various peace initiatives over the years. In the current conflict, both have provided aid to Gaza. Egypt worked with international partners to get humanitarian supplies flown into Gaza through its Rafah border crossing and has established a field hospital to treat some wounded Palestinians. Monis Abu Saab is a Palestinian activist who says that the reluctance of some Arab countries to accept refugees does not minimize their commitment to the Palestinian cause.
I don't think that it contradicts with their support or the rights of the Palestinians. As a matter of fact, I think by refusing to let the refugees go into like Egypt, for example, or Jordan, they are preventing a second Nakba from taking place.
Nakba means catastrophe in Arabic. It refers to the first violent displacement of Palestinians in the founding of the Israeli state in 1948. After they and their Arab allies refused the two-state solution the United Nations advocated, Israeli forces won the ensuing war, pushing thousands of Palestinians into other countries. Both Jordan and Egypt have highlighted the need for a comprehensive solution to the Israeli-Hamas conflict. The governments have said the lasting peace agreement leading to the establishment of an independent Palestinian state is the ultimate solution to the refugee crisis. For VOA Africa, this is Inge Omar, reporting from Cairo.
Mali's ruling military junta in June ordered the decade-old UN mission known as MINUSMA to leave as its relations soured with former international allies. MINUSMA has accelerated its departure in recent weeks as northern Mali has been engulfed in fighting between the rebels and government forces vying for control over areas it vacates. Shortly after the last UN convoy rolled out last week from one base, the ethnic Tuareg rebels announced they had taken it over. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discussed the seriousness of this development to stability in Mali with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
This development is a conflict within a conflict. The escalating violence we've seen in Mali over the last several years has almost universally been driven by the violent extremist groups operating in the north and central part of the country. You know, since 2020, we've seen a tripling in the number of violent events, up to about 1,000 a year. There are an estimated 3,000 Malians who have been killed every year as a result of this violence. In 2015, there was negotiated an Algiers Accord that brought together the Tuareg ethnic groups and their militias with the Malian government. And so they've been allied since that time, fighting against the violent extremist groups. However, you know, with the military coup in Mali in August 2020, the junta has taken an increasingly harsh position against all of its security partners in the region, with the G5 Sahel, against ECOWAS, against the European Union, France. And part of this alienation, the junta has also pushed against the UN peacekeepers, the MINUSMA force, and ultimately demanded that they leave by the end of the year. Now, most of the UN forces were in the north where the Tuareg are based. And so the Tuareg groups saw this as a clear abandonment on the part of the Malian government, and they felt isolated with the UN leaving, and they said this was going to be a violation of the Algiers Accord. So with the withdrawal of the UN forces, we've seen a vacuum in northern Mali, and the Tuareg now are filling that vacuum by taking over the evacuated UN bases. And, you know, the Malian junta isn't in a position to take control themselves. They've largely lost control of northern Mali. So we have this paradoxical situation that as fighting and as the violent extremist threat in Mali escalates, the Malian junta has been pushing away partners, including the UN, and it's created this other complication domestically where it's also alienating its domestic partners.
Security analysts have warned that the Malian state could collapse together, further destabilizing a region where insurgents with links to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State are gaining ground. Is that a credible threat?
Yes, I think that is a credible threat. At this point, the Malian junta only controls half of the country, really the center and the south of the country, and the violent extremist groups have become more lethal and better organized over time. You know, tellingly, when the junta seized power in 2020, it justified its coup by saying that it needed to take power to upgrade the security for the country. But since 2020, the number of violent events have tripled. And so we've seen a dramatic deterioration of security under the junta. They've lost territory. There are more fatalities. And violent extremist groups were, as they had previously been focused in the north, are much more engaged in the center and even the south of the country around Bamako. We've seen a spread even into neighboring countries, Burkina Faso and Niger. And so a lot of this is self-inflicted because the Malian junta has pushed away its security partners in the region, including ECOWAS and the G5, the European Union, and now the UN. And so I think there is a very real threat that the violent insurgency we're seeing and the momentum that it has can sweep further down into the south, into the populated areas of central and southern Mali, and create a real chaotic situation.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed El-Shinawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Chad's pro-democracy opposition leader, Success Masra, who returned home from exile last week, is pressing for the release of civilians arrested for protesting the military government's stay in power. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Pro-democracy opposition leader Success Masra and his supporters in Chad are calling for freedom for civilians, civil society activists and opposition members arrested at protest a year ago. Masra landed at the N'Djamena International Airport unannounced last Friday, about a week after Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi said he had negotiated the pro-democracy leader's return from exile with the Chad government. Masra is the head of the Transformers, Chad's main opposition party. Abdou Karim is an official with the Transformers in the capital N'Djamena. He spoke via a messaging app.
Des militaires avaient été impliqués dans les atrocités du 20 octobre 2022.
Karim says military leader Mohamed Idriss Déby should not continue to hide that soldiers killed at least 50 opposition supporters and civil society activists in a crackdown on pro-democracy protests on October 20, 2022. He says several hundred protesters were arrested and 300 injured in the crackdown.
C'est aussi à cela que certains acteurs politiques avaient refusé d'adhérer.
Karim says the military still holds scores of civilians in several towns, but especially in N'Djamena. Party officials say Chad's military government has endorsed reconciliation and national concord, which indicates it wants to hand power to civilian rule. However, the party says that cannot happen while opposition supporters and civil society activists are in jail. Abderrahmane Koulibaly is Chad's Minister of National Reconciliation and Social Cohesion.
la décision du chef de l'État a été de libérer tout le monde. Il faut aller voir le ministère de la Justice.
Kulemala says that under Deby's orders, the Justice Ministry will release arrested civil society and opposition members once it determines they are not among those who looted weapons during attacks on police posts and military barracks.
Faire des violences, casser les biens publics, c'est vraiment triste.
Kulemala spoke on Chad's national television yesterday. He said the military government will not lift a ban on political rallies imposed after the October 2022 crackdown, as the opposition has asked. The military government says opposition supporters attacked public buildings and military installations in protest aimed at pushing the military government to hand power to civilians. Deby became head of the Military Transitional Council on April 21, 2021, following the death of his father, President Idriss Deby, who was fatally injured while visiting troops fighting rebels in the north of the country. The junta leader was supposed to hand power to a civilian government in October 2022, but instead extended the transition period by 2 years. Chad opposition says Deby is not showing signs he is willing to yield power. Human rights group Amnesty International alleges that during the October 2022 crackdown, Chad authorities used excessive force to disperse peaceful protesters and violated the right to freedom of assembly. Masra fled to the United States through Cameroon following the crackdown. The 11-member Economic Community of Central African States appointed Tshisekedi to be a facilitator for the political transition process in Chad a year ago. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Human Rights Watch says Burkina Faso's military junta has conscripted at least a dozen journalists, civil society activists, and opposition members for its anti-extremist fight in a crackdown on dissent. Burkina's transitional president, Captain Ibrahim Traoré, declared in April a year-long general mobilization to give authorities power to conscript people aged 18 and over. Human Rights Watch says the military government is using the sweeping emergency law against perceived dissidents. A major trade union, the CGTB, has denounced the arbitrary conscriptions and the harassment of citizens who have expressed opinions critical to the transitional authorities. And the international news media report the Ethiopian army regained control of Lalibela today following a pullout by a regional militia whose fighters had overrun much of the historic town in fierce clashes the day before. Lalibela, a UNESCO World Heritage Site renowned for its centuries-old rock-hewn churches, has witnessed combat between federal troops and the Fano militia on several occasions this year as fighting erupted in many parts of the Amhara region. There has been no official casualty toll from yesterday's fighting. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.